Welcome to the Amazing with Grace podcast, a spiritually relevant space for people like you who want to be excellent but not perfect. I am your host, Dr. Q Perry, a board-certified and Christian psychologist based in Dallas, Texas. Although I want this show to be a helpful and inspirational resource for you, it is not meant to substitute for a relationship or treatment with a licensed mental health provider. For more information and additional resources, please visit our website at www.amazingwithgrace.com. Let's get into the show. Hey, welcome to another episode of the Amazing with Grace podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. If you are new and if you are a returning listener, welcome back. Happy New Year, y'all. We made it to 2021. I hope your new year has been off to a very productive and inspirational start. So far, mine has been pretty easygoing, but also empowering just to hit the reset button. There's always something fresh and exciting about a new year. A lot of people are charged and pumped and excited about what the new year will bring. And so I am on the same page right along with you. I know that a lot of people start to set goals for the new year, and I hope that you all have had a chance to listen to the most recent episode where I talked about the mental glow up goals you need for success for this year. If you haven't, I'll make sure to put the link in the show notes. But I know that as people are setting goals, a lot of people are starting to really latch on to this idea of going to therapy, which, of course, I'm biased, but I think this is so amazing that a lot of media outlets, a lot of celebrities and influencers are encouraging people to go to therapy. And I did a previous podcast episode on ways to help you prepare for therapy, and I'll also make sure to link that podcast episode to the show notes. But today I want to dedicate to the people who are already in therapy or who have been to therapy before and really didn't see the benefit of it, or really didn't get what they expected to get out of it. Or if you're currently in therapy, maybe you're not really sure if it's working. You're not really sure what's missing. You're not sure what to expect. And so today, what I'll be talking about is 7 reasons why your therapy isn't working. And what do I mean by not working? Not working means you're not really sure if you're seeing any real changes in your life. Your mood is not really much better. And for some people, you might be feeling a little bit worse. You've noticed that you haven't accomplished the goals that you set out for yourself, for your career, for your relationships, for your family, for your social life, for your academics, spiritually. And so when I talk about not working, it's just you're not seeing any improvement. And so what we'll talk about today are reasons why your therapy isn't working. While I'm talking, you might be reflecting on your therapy experience and you might be thinking, well, I don't really see that my therapy has been a bad experience. Maybe I have seen some changes. Well, I still think that you could benefit from this episode because maybe some of these things that I'm going to talk about can help you see even more benefits in your therapy experience. Okay. As I go through each of these, I'll talk about the reason, and then I'll also give you a standard or a guideline to set for yourself to get the most out of your therapy experience. Before we jump in, I'd like for you to take the time to share this episode with a friend who is already in therapy, or maybe a friend who has gone to therapy but said that it didn't really help them. And once you do that, grab a pen and paper so you can take some notes or open up the notes app on your phone so that you can write down these 7 reasons why your therapy isn't working. This is something that I'm really passionate about. Again, not just because I am a psychologist, but because I have personally benefited from therapy. And so I really regret when I hear people say that therapy doesn't work, or when I hear people talk about having a bad or negative therapy experience. I want people to be able to get the most out of therapy, but there are certain things that have to be in place in order to see any benefits from therapy. There are things that the therapist must bring to the table. There are things that the client or patient must bring to the table in order to see the most benefit from counseling sessions. So let's get to work. One of the main reasons that I see why therapy isn't working for people is because they don't have clear therapy goals, right? Well, obviously the goal of therapy is to feel better, right? But what does feel better look like? How can you make this something that's tangible? How can you make this something that is measurable, right? So when people come to me and say, oh, Dr. Perry, I just want to improve my self-esteem. Well, that's great, but that's not specific enough, right? So you can talk to me all day about wanting to feel better. You want to increase your self-esteem. You want to love yourself. You can talk to me all day about those things, but how will you know if you're actually making progress towards that goal? What will be different about your life? What will you be doing differently? How will you be responding to situations differently if you feel better about yourself, right? So an example could be if you tell me, hey, Dr. Perry, I want to feel better about myself. Well, if we break that down more specifically, does this mean that you want to lose weight? Does this mean that you want to go ahead and take the certification class that you've been thinking about over the last few months? Do you want to take advantage of career coaching offered by your job? Do you want to learn some communication skills so that you can learn how to effectively set boundaries with people? So when we go into therapy and we don't really have clear goals, then therapy can feel like you're running in place, right? And so one of the things that I hear people talk about is that therapy feels good in the moment, but then over time, it's like, well, what exactly am I working on? And I can assure you, when you're lost, the therapist is probably lost as well. And if you're using therapy just to come and chat and you're not really focusing on clear goals, then you're not really getting the benefit of therapy. Remember, a therapeutic relationship is one where it is a professional relationship where the goal is treatment so that you can work towards a specific purpose. And so while venting is part of the process, that's not the end game itself. So it's not just to, I come in here, release all my burdens, and then I'm done. What is the goal of the venting? So that's part of it, where people don't have a clear goal, that they're using therapy just to chat. Something else that's really common that I run into all the time is this notion that it's just a good idea to be in therapy. Now, I know that part of our cultural discussion is to get people to be comfortable with going to therapy, to remove the stigma of going to therapy. And I am all for that. But I think we as in mental health professionals, do people a disservice when we tell them it's just a good idea to be in therapy, right? Well, what are you in therapy for? What are you working on in therapy? It's not just a good idea to go to therapy just to check it off of your list, just to be part of the cultural discussion, right? Again, you still need a purpose that is specific to you, that's beyond venting, that is beyond it just being a good idea, right? And so in order to maximize your therapy experience, a guideline that I would like to have you to set for yourself is to have clear goals. And if you're not sure, right, because I know that if you've never been to therapy, you may not know how to set clear therapy goals, then that is okay. Tell your therapist what you're thinking of. You may not be able to articulate what it would look like. But that's where your therapist can help you decide, okay, well, if you're saying that you want to do better, feel better, your therapist can say, I noticed that you are not as assertive when you're around this group of people as you are with another group of people. Let's explore that. So maybe the goal could be to be able to have the confidence to assert yourself in many situations instead of allowing other people to speak for you. And then you notice that that negatively impacts your mood because you're beating yourself up because you just let this group of people walk all over you. Right. So I hope that makes sense. And again, if you want more information about setting goals in therapy, I do talk a little bit more about how to set those goals in the previous podcast on preparing for therapy. So let's move on to a second reason why your therapy isn't working. This one is you don't want to be vulnerable. Right now, I know that vulnerability is not easy. It's not comfortable, nor should it be. And none of us like to be vulnerable, but you're not open to the process. And when people come to therapy and they're not willing to be vulnerable, then I already know they're not discussing the real issue, right? People come in and they talk to me about what I call test problems. Right. These are just some, they might be important, but they're not the real issue. And when you don't want to be vulnerable, then you don't see the real change that follows the vulnerability. Or if you're in therapy and you don't want to be vulnerable because you're worried what your therapist might think of you. You're worried that your therapist thinks that you're weak or that you sound crazy or that you're overreacting or that you seem stupid or you're worried. Let's say you're a black woman and your therapist is a black woman. You might be worried that your therapist thinks black women don't cry about certain things like this or black men don't have these kinds of reactions after a breakup. So I want you to ask yourself, do I notice that I filter my responses when I'm in therapy? Do I find myself really thinking about an issue in between sessions, but then once I actually get in the session, I kind of change my mind about talking about it? Or I just tell myself, I'll talk about it next time? If there's one issue that you notice that you need to talk about, but you never get around to it, then that's probably the area where you need to be more vulnerable. Or if there is an issue that you hold back on telling your therapist your true reactions about the situation, or you're just kind of what psychologists call intellectualizing. Let's say I'm in therapy and I'm going through a breakup, and clearly I have all the behavioral signs of a heartbreak. I'm crying myself to sleep at night. I'm barely getting by at work. I don't really want to be bothered with my friends. I notice that I'm drinking a couple of more glasses of wine each night, right? So I'm having a really hard time. Well, if I'm intellectualizing in therapy, it means that I am talking about the problem more in my head. So I'm talking about it more from an intellectual level. I'm talking about it, but I'm not really feeling the emotion in therapy. I'm trying my best to not show the therapist the pain that's inside. I'm not willing to cry. I'm not willing to discuss the disappointment and the loneliness and the sadness and the fear I feel because of this breakup. So the standard or the guideline that I want you to set for yourself is to ask yourself, have I been willing to, quote, go there in therapy? And I'm not just talking about tears. Tears is not the only way to show vulnerability. But I want you to ask yourself, have I been willing to truly go there in therapy? Have I been willing to talk about some parts of myself that I really, really, really would rather not talk about? Some parts of myself that's embarrassing? Some parts of myself that I think are ugly? Have you been willing to go there? Have you been willing to, what I would call, bare your soul for your therapist so that you can get to the core of the issue? I am not saying that this is easy. I'm definitely not wanting to impress upon you that this is easy, and I'm not impressing upon you that every single session should be full of tears. But what I am saying is to really evaluate what you're talking about in therapy and if it's the true issue, and if not, what's holding you back. Change is hard, but it's so worth the work. Your future self will thank you for taking the risk to be vulnerable. Number three, here's another reason why your therapy isn't working. And that is putting expectations on your therapist to do your work. Now, what do I mean by doing your work? Well, this is where people come into therapy with an unspoken, you're the expert, so you should fix me kind of mentality, where it's like, I come in, I sit in your chair or I sit on your couch, I dump all my problems out, and the unspoken expectation is that as the therapist, you should be giving me advice. You should tell me the answers. You should tell me what I am supposed to do. And so that's putting the expectation on the therapist to do your work. And that's not fair to you. It's not fair to the therapist. And it really diminishes the effectiveness of the process of therapy, right? And so if you're not committed, if you are not truly committed to the process of therapy, then you're not going to see the true benefits of what you're paying for or what your insurance is paying for. Sometimes therapists experience clients or patients who don't take the initiative to remember what was talked about between sessions. So we might have this beautiful session where you have these amazing aha moments, and then the next session, it's like, oh, I forgot what we talked about. Now, come on now, like, really? You forgot what we talked about? Or it's like, remind me what I talked about last time, or what did I say about such and such? So you're not really truly engaged in the process. You might be present, but you're not truly engaged in the process. Something else that's small but also makes a difference is if you put all the expectations on your therapist to remind you about your appointments. That's also another indicator of your commitment and engagement to the process. Right now, I know that most therapists have a system of sending out reminders via email or call or text, and that's fine. But see that as a courtesy, not an expectation or an obligation, where you didn't show up for your appointment because the therapist didn't call you to remind you of the appointment. Or if you have to cancel the appointment, the therapist has to track you down to reschedule the appointment. It's things like that that can diminish the overall effectiveness of the treatment if you put all the expectations on your therapist to do your work. Remember, this is your experience, right? Now, the therapist does have some obligations. There are some expectations, but it's not on the therapist to tell you what to do. Even if the therapist has an idea of what you should do, it's not about what the therapist thinks you should do. It's more about what you're feeling led to do that's best for you. Talk about your options. What do you think would be the pros and cons of taking different avenues in the situations? So far we've talked about not having clear therapy goals, not being willing to be vulnerable, and putting expectations on the therapist to do your work. Now, this next one is something that I think a lot of people maybe think about but don't really know how to articulate, and that is your therapist just is not a good fit for you. Well, how would you know if your therapist isn't a good fit for you? There are several factors that you can consider, and one of those is their therapeutic approach. And I love when people call me to get a consultation for my services and they ask me about my therapeutic approach, and I'm able to share with them how I generally do therapy. And I say generally because, of course, the treatment has to be tailored to my patient, but Some therapy approaches may not work for you. So let me give you an example. Let's say you are a person who is very structured, who likes steps, who likes an agenda. You might benefit from a therapist who purely practices from a CBT, what we call cognitive behavior therapy approach, right? CBT is very structured. It's very effective. It is considered a gold standard for many types of concerns. Or you might be a person who is more of a feelings person, where you like to identify different emotions and really process things. I've had people to come into my office and ask me, am I going to have to talk about my childhood? Yeah, probably. But that's my approach. There are some therapists who they don't talk about past at all. They only talk about what's going on right now and how to move forward. And so you really want to ask your therapist about their therapy approach. If you're not sure, and you're, of course, if you're already in therapy, it's never too late to ask. Maybe if they explained it to you over the phone and you're a few sessions in and you kind of forgot and you're not really sure why they ask certain questions or why they don't ask certain questions, it's okay to ask for more details on the approach that they're using with you and how that particular therapy approach helps people make changes. One of the major complaints that I've heard from people who did not have a good therapy experience is that the therapist didn't say much. It's like I'm sitting there venting and talking and sharing, and the therapist wasn't saying much, and I wanted some feedback. That's something for you to pay attention to. Well, for one, what kind of feedback are you expecting? Are you expecting questions that help you further explore what you're talking about? Or are you expecting feedback as in, I think you should do ABC about this situation? But nevertheless, I have people who have talked to me about a not so good therapy experience because they felt like they were just kind of talking to themselves. The therapist was just sitting there. But you have to know your therapist's approach, because some therapy approaches, they do listen more. And the goal of that approach is for the therapist to provide a space that is safe, that allows for self-reflection and personal revelation. I've also had people to tell me that they've had therapists that talk too much, right? The therapist ends up talking about himself or herself too much. And so it kind of felt like, well, this isn't really therapy for me, because you're talking to me about all of your problems and everything you've been through. So again, you may not be seeing some benefits from therapy if your therapist isn't a good fit for you because their therapeutic approach isn't a good match for you. Some of this comes down to the therapist's personal style. Therapists are humans too. So there are just some people that you just click with, right? So sometimes you meet strangers, and it feels like a kindred spirit. It seems like y'all just click, like y'all been knowing each other. Now, right, I don't obviously mean that you can hang out with your therapist, but there are times when you are blessed to have a therapeutic experience where it seems like this person just gets you. And other times it feels like you have to really work at it. And that is something to pay attention to. Now, what I don't encourage is for you to therapist hop. The minute the therapist says something that you don't like, you just say, screw that, I'll find somebody else. I don't mean it in that sense. But I want you to examine the quality of the interactions that you have with the therapist. I've had people to tell me, I really don't think my therapist likes me. Okay, well, what makes you say that? And so they might give me some details about the therapy experience, and from how they describe it, I kind of would feel the same way. And there are other times where it's like, well, maybe that person is just reserved. Maybe this person naturally has a confrontational manner, right? And if you are a person who doesn't really like confrontation in your personal life, then you will likely bring that style into your therapy work. You may just be a person who is very supportive and you cheerlead your client and you don't really challenge your client. So ask yourself, does my therapist challenge me? Does my therapist encourage me to interpret a situation in a different way? Does my therapist point out any inconsistencies? Well, I say that I'm not bothered by this situation, but I notice that it comes up every session or every other session. Or I swear I worked through something with my previous therapist, or I swear I have peace about something, yet I'm sitting here crying. Does your therapist make comments about inconsistencies like that? Because those are the types of interactions that's going to help you shed light on what your issues are and help you move towards your goals. So your therapy may not be working because your therapist may not be a good fit for you. And so here's a standard or a guideline that I like to help you set for yourself. I want you to ask your therapist, if you don't already know, I want you to ask your therapist about their therapy approach and discuss your observations and ask your therapist for feedback. Some therapists will voluntarily give you feedback. Again, this is based on their personal style and their therapeutic approach. Sometimes they'll volunteer that information, and sometimes you'll have to ask directly. Now, again, this is not the same thing as asking them for advice. I mean, I've had people to say, hey, do you think we should stay together? Hey, do you think we should break up? Hey, do you think I should leave this job? Now, the therapist is not, or should not, let me say that they won't, but the therapist should not be telling you what you need to do or what you should do, right? Unless it's something that's dealing with your health and safety, where they can give you these guidelines of what's healthy for you. Some helpful questions for you to ask your therapist are, what is your perception of what I've been sharing so far? Have you noticed any unhealthy patterns that you think we should further explore? From your experience with me, does it seem like I am really engaged in the therapeutic process? Are there other things that I could be doing to experience more benefits from therapy? Now, this fifth reason that your therapy isn't working is a bit confrontational and it's a bit uncomfortable. But hey, somebody has to say it. And that is that you secretly or unconsciously enjoy the benefits of the problem. This is where the mic drops, that you secretly enjoy the benefits of the problem. And here's what I mean. There are times in our lives when we can become so consumed with the problem, and we can become so engrossed in a problem, and we can have a problem be so much a part of our identity that we don't even see that we enjoy the benefits of that problem. Let me give you a couple of examples. Let's say I have an adult daughter and we don't get along, and that's the reason I'm in therapy. So I'm in therapy and I'm telling my therapist how much my daughter is ungrateful. She's so disrespectful. I've made so many sacrifices. I just can't win with her. She says I don't love her. She accuses me of having favorites, and it's just horrible. Now, what do you think would happen if my therapist just allows me to go on and on and on about this and rehearse all of our interactions and rehash all the negative conversations we've had, all the fights we've had, blah, blah, blah. And then the therapist makes some suggestions or points out some things to try or asks, have you all tried this or would you be willing to try that? And the person continues to avoid answering those questions by going right back to storytelling. Or the person never really gets around to answering the questions, they're dismissive, or they say they already tried XYZ, right? Well, then for me as a therapist, my next question is, well, what do you get from continuing to have this problem? And it's such a startling question. And I want to ask you, what are you getting from having this problem? Well, a benefit to having that particular problem, using that example, is as long as I get to say that my daughter is the issue, then I don't have to make real changes. That's the benefit. I get to be comfortable and I get to complain about my daughter, and I don't have to face maybe some parenting mistakes that I know that I made. I don't have to be vulnerable with my daughter and talk to her about some of those mistakes and take ownership of my part in our relationship conflict. I get to avoid the sadness of thinking about the poor relationship that I had with my own mother, right? So if you think about a situation like that, as painful as the situation may be to that person who has problems with her daughter, there are also some benefits to that. Another example that I often run into is related to this area of diagnosis. So let's say I have a patient who is diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and the person is in treatment, and I notice everything or every other word they say is my bipolar disorder, my bipolar, my bipolar, my bipolar. And while the bipolar disorder explains certain behaviors, it does not excuse all behaviors. And so if you get down to the root of it, what is the benefit of having that problem? Well, maybe one of the benefits is nobody holds me accountable because I get to say my bipolar caused me to do these certain things. I get to cuss you out because of my bipolar. You don't have to hold me accountable, or you shouldn't hold me accountable because of my bipolar, right? Same thing comes up with depression. Same thing comes up with an anxiety disorder diagnosis. Same thing comes up with a PTSD diagnosis. So when I'm asking you to think about whether you enjoy the benefits of having a problem, I'm asking you to think about, what does having this problem keep me from having to face? Am I avoiding changing? Am I avoiding setting boundaries? Am I avoiding looking at myself? Am I avoiding having to acknowledge my role for where I am today? And so the standard or the guideline that I'd ask you to consider for this one is to ask yourself, what benefits do I get from having this problem? Even if it's a painful problem, what benefits do I have? Do I get a lot of attention? Do I get a lot of pity? Do I get excused from certain responsibilities? And so when you acknowledge any potential benefits to maintaining this problem, then that's something that you can share with your therapist to help you work through. All right. Number six, this is a huge one. There's no life application outside of therapy. Y'all, I cannot tell you how this is one of the single most influential reasons why your therapy is not working. Remember how I said earlier that sometimes people come to therapy and they have these beautiful aha moments, and then the next week they're like, oh, I don't even remember what we talked about. This is called no life application outside of therapy. This means that they're not doing the homework assignments. They're not asking for homework assignments. They're not doing any additional reading on the topics. They're not paying any attention to any reactions that they're having that could be different. Oh, I noticed that I'm responding a little bit better. Or I noticed that when I interacted with this person, I didn't even have the same intensity of emotion that I normally have. They're not even paying attention. And so what do you do between your therapy sessions? Do you just go to therapy sessions and then once it's over, you go on about life as usual? I remind people often that there's 168 hours in a week. And if you come to therapy once a week, that's 1 hour out of 168 hours, which means that your life happens outside of therapy. And for those of you who go to therapy on a biweekly basis, that's only 1 hour out of every 336 hours. Think about that. 1 hour out of every 336 hours. Your life happens outside of therapy. And in order for you to see benefits of therapy, you have to be willing to do some work outside of therapy. And this doesn't mean using the same approach that we've sometimes used when it comes to our coursework. Let me hurry up and get the assignment done before I go to class. Let me sit down and do it the night before. You could do that, but how much do you really learn? How much do you really apply the principles and the strategies and the tips that you and your therapist have talked about if you're shortchanging yourself by doing something the night before or doing something, you know, 30 minutes before the appointment? Or if you journal about something right after therapy and you don't open your journal up again until you go to therapy? In order for you to see the most benefit out of therapy, you have to be willing to do some work in between your sessions. Now, I know that time is limited, but we all know that we make time for what we want to make time for. We all get the same 24 hours a day. And so the standard that I would like to have you set for yourself is to set aside some time, make the time, find the time between your sessions to do some work. And this is going to look different for everyone. This is even going to look different between sessions depending on your schedule. But some ideas could be things like setting aside some time after therapy to reflect on what you talked about, making a note of how you feel after the sessions. Did you have any questions that came up? Or for people who write notes during the session, take some time after therapy to review the notes. Now, I know that some people's schedule is kind of back to back, and so you may not have that free 30 minutes or an hour right after your session, but maybe you could do it right before bed. Maybe you could do it the first thing the next morning. If you are meeting for therapy on a biweekly basis, maybe find 30 minutes to an hour during the off weeks to reflect on your progress so far. Write down some questions for your therapist. And one of the best strategies that I can give you is to document different situations in your phone or in your journal that you've struggled with. Because a lot of times we might rely on our memory to help us remember what to talk about in the next session. But from week to week or every 2 weeks, we may forget about, oh yeah, there was that one situation in the store where I thought the lady was being racist. And I noticed I had a really, really, really tough time calming down after that situation. We might forget about something like that. But maybe something that we forget could be the key that unlocks the door to change for us. So I encourage you to document different situations in your phone or in your journal to help you know what to talk about in therapy so that you can continue to do your work outside of therapy. And this last, but definitely not least, major reason why your therapy isn't working is commitment issues. Yes, we can have commitment issues for therapy, not just in romantic relationships. Now, I broke this down to two levels. This first level has to do with your commitment to the process. Remember when I talked earlier about how you might be putting expectations on your therapist to do the work? This really comes down to your commitment to the process. So again, I talked about putting the expectation on your therapist to remind you to come to therapy, to remind you to reschedule your appointment. I've also experienced lack of commitment when people show up to therapy on an inconsistent basis. And what I mean by inconsistent is Let's say we've agreed for you to come in every 2 weeks. And if you're coming in every 2 weeks, right, that's obviously twice a month. Well, if you're skipping every other appointment or you're late for every appointment or every other appointment, think about how much time you have missed in therapy. So if you've missed those times, whether it's being late or whether you're canceling, for whatever the reason is, the reality is that's less time that you have had working on improving your life. How can therapy truly be effective if you're not there? Some people are also not committed to the process because they only see therapy as something to do when they're in crisis, right? So I'm not feeling good. I need a boost. I need somebody to pick me up. I'm going to therapy. Yes, I'm committed. I'm going to do all this work. And the moment they start to feel better, or the moment them and bae get back together or work things out, they cancel their appointment. They no-show. They come up with all kinds of reasons why they're good. Or they say that they can't afford therapy when they've been affording everything else. And again, once a crisis happens, then they go back to therapy. Now, for some therapists, they're completely okay with that approach. I don't typically tolerate that in my practice because it signifies a lack of engagement, and that's not the type of patient that I like to invest into. And so maybe you're not getting the most out of therapy because you're not showing up for you. This is your process. Some people even show their lack of commitment by hopping around to different therapists. As soon as the therapist says something that they don't like or they didn't understand or they thought was judgmental, they're gone. They never go back to express themselves. They never go back to give the therapist an opportunity to clarify any misunderstandings or correct any misunderstandings. They're gone. They're gone to the next therapist. And so if this is you, I really want you to think about, what's been my role? Do I really show up for my therapy appointments? Now, I don't want you to be hard on yourself if something comes up and you truly have to cancel or reschedule an appointment, or if you get sick and you truly need to take a break from therapy, or if you have a financial crisis that causes you to have to take a break from therapy. I'm talking about those of us who are going to therapy, but they have the wrong approach and the wrong attitude towards therapy itself or the therapist in terms of their commitment, right? So you're one part of the process when it comes to therapy. Another reason that your therapy doesn't work is your therapist's commitment to the process, right? So I'm not just having these standards for you as the client or patient, I'm also having ethical responsibility and integrity for us as therapists. It makes me cringe when I hear my patients talk about a previous therapist who cancels on them all the time, or their therapist who regularly forgets their appointments, right? Now, again, we are human too. There are times when we might double book ourselves by mistake, or we might have something that comes up where we might have to cancel an appointment. But this should not be happening frequently, okay? Or you go to a therapy session and it feels like your therapist doesn't remember anything you've talked to them about. You're constantly having to tell them the same stories or remind them of what you talked about last time. Now again, we're human, we're not perfect. And there are times when we might not remember a person's name in a story that you were telling. But in general, we should remember the gist of what you shared, okay? I'm not encouraging you to expect perfection from your therapist, but I am encouraging you to take note of your therapist's commitment to you and your process, because the same way that I would expect for you to show up and be engaged and committed to this process and willing to be vulnerable, I expect the same thing from myself and my peers. And so I'm asking you to think about, what has been your experience with your therapist so far? Do you notice that it seems like your therapist frequently cancels appointments on you, or is late to your appointments, or reschedules on you, or doesn't seem to remember, and you're constantly having to retell your story? Does it seem like your therapist is really, really, really busy? So busy that they can't give you a personal experience, that they're not really present themselves? And I know that that can happen. Some therapists are incredibly busy where they're seeing people back to back to back. For some people, that works. Some people are able to do it without blinking. And there are other therapists who do it because they have to do it for the finances, and it drains them. And they're not always present for every single client or patient that they have. So something that you may want to consider setting for your standard for this area of commitment is to examine your own attendance and pattern of attending therapy, and then also look at your therapist's pattern of attending therapy and see if you've noticed a difference in your therapist's engagement depending on the time of day. Now, I know that this may not be possible for everybody because some people have standing appointments on, say, for example, Tuesdays at 11 a.m. So you may not have a whole lot of flexibility there. But for those of you who do have flexibility, maybe see if there is a different day of the week for you or your therapist that works better, where you can get more out of the process. If your therapist is really busy and has some availability, maybe catch this person earlier in the week where they're fresh versus always wanting to schedule on a Friday afternoon. Or see if you can schedule your appointment for later in the afternoon. If you notice that maybe you or your therapist, actually you're not a morning person, and so you're kind of sluggish in the morning, you're not as sharp. Or you notice your therapist might be yawning a little bit and they're not completely awake yet, then would it make sense for you to schedule an appointment at 8 o'clock in the morning? Now, I'm not talking about being rigid here, because if that's the only time that's available and that you're available or that your therapist is available, then that's just what you have to work with. But what I'm asking you to do is to consider some of these factors that could be playing a role in the effectiveness and overall benefits that you're receiving from your course of treatment. So we've talked about these seven areas or seven reasons why your therapy isn't working: not having clear therapy goals, not being willing to be vulnerable, putting expectations on your therapist to do your work. Your therapist may not be a good fit for you. You enjoying the benefits of the problem, not having any life application outside of therapy, and having commitment issues on either your part or the therapist's part or on both of your parts. So out of these seven reasons, are there any that you can identify as a reason why your therapy didn't work when you maybe were in therapy? Are there ones that you can tweak if you're in therapy right now? I'm curious. Shoot me a DM on IG at Dr. Q Perry, or send me a little note by going to the show's website at www.amazingwithgrace.com and clicking on the Dr. Q's Couch tab. Let me know which of these was most helpful to you. Which of these do you want to try? And if you've gone to therapy before, I really hope that what we've talked about today will give you a jump start on some areas to pay attention to should you decide to give therapy another try. And I hope that you do. I really hope that you do. Let us move now into our prayer time. Dear God, thank you for letting us gather together in this space to talk about some ways that we can improve our therapy experience. Thank you for the opportunity to see 2021. We know that so many people did not make it to see a new year, and so we are grateful for the opportunity to see a new year, to have new beginnings. We thank you for your mercies that are new every day. And We are asking for wisdom and guidance in our role in our healing. We're asking for discernment on our therapist's role in our healing. As we endeavor to go to therapy and improve our mood, improve our relationships, I pray that if there are any factors that are impeding this process or minimizing this process for any of my listeners, I'm asking you to reveal it to them, reveal it to their therapist, and I am thanking you in advance for either an improved experience or a graceful transition out of that experience into another experience with the therapist who is wonderful and who is attentive and who is committed and who is trained and who is equipped to hear the heart of every listener on this podcast. I thank you for the opportunity to pour into their lives, and it is in your son Jesus' name that we pray. Amen. Well, that is all that I have for today. If this has been helpful to you in any way, I invite you to share this with some friends who are in therapy, or again, a person who has maybe gone to therapy but didn't see much, if any, benefit from going to therapy. And if you have topics that you would like for me to discuss on the podcast, feel free to reach me the same way. You can send me a DM on IG, or you can send me an email by going to the show's website. I sincerely hope that you are thriving in your pursuit of happiness. Until next time, take care.